Hi, I'm Simon Sharwood, APAC editor of The Register.
And I'm Jack Clark, San Francisco reporter for The Register.
We're here today at VMworld 2013 in San Francisco, and we've just had the opportunity to interview VMware CEO Pat Gelsinger. Gelsinger had a whole bunch of fascinating things to say about the future of the company's vCloud hybrid service.
One of the strangest parts of Gelsinger's confidence in the service is he seems convinced that he's not going to end up competing with Amazon Web Services, despite them doing a $600 million contract for CIA.
So you'll hear that and plenty more in this podcast. But enough of our yakking. Let's get into this interview with Pat Gelsinger, who starts by responding to our question about whether or not the software-defined data center really has much to offer to smaller IT shops.
You know, I think at some scale, right, I think there's, right, they're going to want sort of, the SDDC in a box.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know, here's the rack, here's the software, I don't care what's in the rack, right, you know, just go make it work, right, or just get it from the cloud, right, you know, and right, you know, or some combination thereof. And I think for that universe, we're probably a year or two away from having that simple, right, of a solution, right, that really makes that simple. And for those, right, you know, we say, boy, you know, there are incremental steps that we can take in terms of cost savings, et cetera, but it's not yet that simple.
It seems to me that in the panel yesterday, you were almost kind of suggesting that businesses that are sufficiently relaxed that they can tolerate the complexities of the public cloud or the compromise of the public cloud, you're kind of happy for them to go.
I wouldn't say happy with them to go. I think there's a class of people building and operating data centers today that unless there is a powerful business reason for them to do so, you know, they may be better served, right, by truly going to a public cloud offering. You know, at the same time, you know, there's a whole lot of good business reasons why they might choose not to as well. But clearly, you know, the scale of operations, the sophistication of operations, et cetera, they may not be best served by operating those data center services themselves because they just don't have enough scale at that level. So we do think some of those, they could go, right, truly to operate in a public cloud environment. At the same time, there's a whole lot of those customers, right, you know, who have good reasons, right? You know, those might be, you know, privacy reasons, those might be governance reasons, those, right, might be, you know, driven by some of their, right, unique networking requirements where they exist on the planet, you know, a whole bunch of those kind of things as well. So, you know, one of the things we think that we need to do, right, and I'll say in our public cloud offering today, we are focused, right, on enterprise commercial customers. Right. You know, and there's a reason for that, right? You know, that's where the heart of our customers are today. That's the heart of our business today. You know, we were, you know, quite clear that over time we will expand that to have more developer and line of business focus as well. But we're starting with the core of our customer base. And, you know, that's a very natural thing for us to do and a natural place for us to start.
Given Amazon doing that $600 million cloud contract for the CIA, is it not likely that you may find yourself competing with Amazon for on-premises jobs for some very large clients in the future? Or do you think that was a specific case?
I think it was an anomalous case, right? Because I'm not sure Amazon could do what they're doing there, right? You know, and scale, right? You know, I mean, you know, that's a different business model. It's a different customer base, a different support structure, right? Et cetera. And yeah, I think it's interesting, right, thing for them to go pursue that space. But I don't think that's a particularly scalable solution for lots of enterprise customers, and I don't think that that will, you know, be their business focus over time. But I think it's interesting as well, and, you know, we will definitely, you know, continue to monitor those situations carefully. You know, that said, right, we're seeing a tremendous interest from our customers with the vCloud hybrid service because it is this compatible, seamless offering that's very low friction, right? Being able to move things back and forth clearly extends their franchise. It makes all of their on-premise assets better, right? You know, it's able, you know, DR as a service. Hey, I just, you know, I'll do DR for you, right? You know, being able to burst. Hey, run all of your data centers hotter because you know you have a compatible burst service that you can take advantage of. Test and dev, do it in the cloud. Why are you capitalizing that? Operationalize it and bill it back to your developers. But you know that you can, right, bring it back and run it when you need SLAs, governance, right, privacy, regulatory environments against it without issue, right, against it. So, you know, we're getting great resonance, right, to that message, and we think that will be the mainstream, as I articulated in the keynote yesterday.
And just one other quick question, if no one minds. How do you expect to use the technologies within Pivotal as components of the VCHS? You're already doing Cloud Foundry, but they have a lot of other stuff as well.
Yeah, and we will very happily, and backing up, right? Remember, you know, Pivotal, like VMware, is the EMC. It's an independent company.
But so, it's owned by EMC, VMware, and General Electric.
Right. And, you know, eventually we want to do a public offering and, you know, so on. I mean, that's, you know, that's the strategy. And with that independence, you know, I get to partner with Cloud Foundry and MapR. I mean, with Cloudera and MapR, just like I work with Pivotal, mm-hmm. right? Just like I work with NetApp, right? You know, so there is that view that, hey, I'm going to be able to leverage them, but I also am able to, you know, clearly have a broader ecosystem. But, you know, given I do have a 30% ownership, you know, I do have a vested interest in their success. Who will be one of the earliest and best users of the big data extensions that we announced? Pivotal, right? You know, why did we announce on-premise? You know, the on-premise version of Cloud Foundry has significant VMware engineering in it, right? You know, I'm investing in making that the preferred PaaS layer to go with that. I'm bundling that and delivering that as a VCHS service offering. So, you know, we do expect to be able to really leverage and differentiate based on the deeper integration and partnership we have with them in their respective markets.
At this point during our chat, the door to the room we were sitting in opened and closed rather noisily, and that drowned out our question about whether or not network virtualization is bad for networking vendors. Here's Gelsinger's response.
Think about that question. I think it's important to first go back in history and look how it worked out in the server market, right? Because, you know, as we brought virtualization into the server market, right, you know, we had some of the same kind of conversations. You know, I was at Intel, right, and I remember my first meeting with Diane and Mendel, and basically they said, hey, we're going to take four servers and turn it into one, right? And I'm sitting here and I run 10 million server CPUs a year, and I'm dividing that by four, and I don't want my server CPU business to go to 2.5 million server CPUs per year. This did not seem like a good value proposition to me at the time when that was one of the businesses working for me, right? Now, is that the way it worked out? Well, no, it didn't work out that way. You know, these things take time to emerge, right? You know, they also spur new innovation, right? And at the end of the day, right, has the ODMs won the enterprise space for servers? No. Who are the server providers for enterprise today? HP, IBM, Dell, Cisco's come into that marketplace. But, you know, it might have changed the nature of what the server is, and they, you know, came up with new features to support virtualization. You know, but largely the incumbent server providers were still the incumbent server providers 10 years later after virtualization is now highly deployed inside of data centers. So let's go think about the switching market. Right, you know, as we bring in, you know, the same thing, NSX like ESX, right? You know, 2013 like 2004, right, for ESX. And how will this emerge? Hey, it's going to come in as this new layer, right, of efficiency, right, being able to deploy new services on top of it. And are people going to tomorrow go choose, right, Compal or Quanta-based white box switches and rip out their Cisco, Brocade, Juniper infrastructure? Well, did they do that for server virtualization? No. Do I expect them to do it for their networking infrastructure? No. You know, I don't. Right, why? Because enterprises, they're safe, secure, they test, they want support, all of those types of things. And over time, it's going to introduce new layers of innovation, right? And we fully expect that to be the case. It is going to spur new types of innovation. But that's not how enterprises work, right? That isn't how it played out for servers. It's not how we expect it to play out, right, for network and switches. But we do expect, right, just like for server servers, you know, when virtualization emerged, those x86 servers were 5 to 10% utilized. Now they're 50% utilized, 5x, right? What do we expect for the network infrastructure? Dramatic improvements in utilization, efficiencies, deployment times. Physical servers used to take months to deploy. VMs now take seconds to deploy, right? We're going to be able to deploy virtual networks in seconds the same way. I mean, you know, so we see it very analogous to what we did before. And, you know, many of the stories, boom, right, tomorrow, margins fall through the floor, white box switches emerge and all that kind of stuff. You know, it just isn't how it worked. Now, we would also argue that some of the things that we're going to do reduce the load on the network, right? And again, the server, you know, the server analogy is significant. Servers went from 5 to 10% utilized to 50% utilized, right? You know, if in fact you deploy technologies like the east-west switching, routing, and virtual firewalls, that's a lot of traffic you don't need to run over the network, right? You know, I mean, that's an enormous, right? And, you know, the statistic cited is, this is from a Cisco white paper, right? 70% of data center traffic is intra-VM traffic. That can all happen inside of the virtual layer and doesn't need to run over the physical network. Could you save money taking 70% off of your network? Right. You know, and again, it's transformational in that sense. And if you're just looking at it as another layer, right, of, you know, software licensing that you're putting onto it, it's just saying, you know, you've missed the point.